Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Hello, this is the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast, and this is Pastor Wynn Greer. Good to be here today. We are thankful for the opportunity always to come this way each and every week at this same time. And this is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. You are invited. We'd love for you to come and to visit with us in any or all of our services. We have many opportunities throughout the week that we take to worship the Lord together. And there is Sunday school every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and then 11 a.m. our Sunday morning worship service. Every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. we have our midweek prayer and Bible study. And so we wanted to take just a moment and tell you about that. We're located just outside of the Boone city limits, Highway 105 South. You take Baird's Creek Road. We are 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road. That is just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And so we'd love for you to come out and visit with us. I want to also mention that we just finished up the fall semester of the Victory Bible Institute. And this is something that we have been involved with for many years now. It is a wonderful opportunity for anyone that is interested in studying the Bible, studying the Word of God. You don't have to be a preacher. You do not have to be a missionary. We have several ladies that have gone through our courses. We have young people that have gone through. We have housewives. We have missionaries. You name it. We have people that are Sunday school teachers. We have retired people that just wanted to take some time and learn more in a structured study of the Bible. So we're talking about Victory Bible Institute. We have several opportunities and ways in which to get involved. You can go to the physical address in Roan Mountain, Tennessee, and this is a ministry of the Victory Baptist Church. You can go. We have classes every Thursday night. You can take these classes correspondence. You can take these classes over the internet. And so a lot of ways to get involved. If you are interested in studying the Bible, it is a 3-year course, and it doesn't matter where you start. You don't have to start at the very beginning. You can jump in anywhere along the 3 years because it rotates the same classes over the 3-year time period. So you can jump in anywhere along the way, and in 3 years you'll be done, and then that spring you can graduate. But if you're interested, you can contact Pastor Jerry Honeycutt. He is the pastor of the Victory Baptist Church in Roan Mountain, Tennessee, and it's called Victory Bible Institute. But you can give Brother Honeycutt a call. His number is 423-772-3848, and I'll give that again, 423-772-3848. The spring semester is going to begin January the 8th. So about a month from now, we're going to start back up with our spring semester. And that number again is 423-772-3848. You can find it on the web, vbcministries.org. And this spring, the 3 classes that are going to be offered is New Testament Survey Part 2, and then the Book of Revelation, and also Missions and Evangelism. So once a week, 3 different classes, and that lasts for 16 weeks, and then we'll pick up again in the fall. It's a wonderful opportunity. A lot of pastors, a lot of preachers are just not capable of moving, going off somewhere and going to school. I know when I went through Victory Bible Institute, I was already pastoring the church. I couldn't move off and go somewhere. So this was a wonderful opportunity for me to gain some knowledge in the Word of God. Basic survey type classes. And we have several students. I think last semester we had about 50 enrolled, somewhere right around in there, 50 to 60. And so we wanted to let you know about that. It's good to be here with Noah today. Now, he's my... I don't know, Noah, we're going to have to give you an official title. I don't know if it's board operator, producer, technician. What sounds good to you?
I dabble in all of it.
All of it. The everything man. So he's here today. You having a good day?
Yes, I am. And good. It is good to be here. We do want to say welcome to all our listeners right here on AM 1450 WATA. That's out of Boone, North Carolina. Our listeners on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia. And those on 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate our listeners, and I thank Noah. I appreciate him so much for all the help. He does do everything. Helps me on all of the radio broadcasts, produces, puts them together, emails them. I mean, he does a great deal. And then at church, Sister Julie Hayes, she does a wonderful job putting everything on the website. And we appreciate her as well and everybody that takes a part in this ministry. But today we want to continue our series on the subject of heroes of liberty. And we've been taking a week, each and every week, looking at different individuals and their contribution to the subject of liberty, whether that's national, spiritual, biblical. We've looked in several different areas. We began with Moses, and as far forward as we have got has been about the 1940s, 50s, somewhere along in there. So we've covered a lot of different people in a lot of different ages. But today, I hope this broadcast will be especially insightful. We're going to go back. We're going to look at an event in our history that had our country in an uproar, sort of like it is today. I'm sure that all of our listeners are familiar with the protests that have gone on all around the country in different areas over the tragic deaths of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. And one of these took place in Ferguson, Missouri, and the other in Queens, New York. And I say tragic deaths because, anytime anybody dies, that's a tragedy, and especially under the circumstances. But there are some similarities that both of these cases have with our historical incident that we're going to look at today. But both of these instances involved someone dying unnecessarily. Didn't have to happen, but it did. Both involved accusations of police wrongdoing. Both of these instances went before a grand jury, and both came back with a verdict that the police were not guilty of any wrongdoing. And so that's what really all three of these, our historical example, we're going to look at, and then what's going on in America today. And as a result of the two recent ones that I'm talking about, there have been protests before the verdict came out. There have been more protests after the verdicts came back from the grand jury. And there have been riots. There has been looting. There has been more violence. There's been racial tensions. There has been calls for the system to be indicted. And I've heard that several times over the past couple of weeks from people in very high places that really ought to be more careful when they make statements like that. But I heard it on the news. There's been political leaders that have said, we indict the system, or that the system ought to be indicted. Well, the system that they have to be referring to, if they're referring to the two cases that have just come back, they have to be referring to the jury, the grand jury. Both of these cases went before a grand jury. This was not some judge that made a decision that the police involved had no wrongdoing. It wasn't a judge. It wasn't a lawyer. It wasn't a governor or one person. It was a number of people on a grand jury that heard the evidence, heard the sides, and came back with a not guilty verdict. So when they're talking about the system being indicted, that has to be what they're talking about, the jury system. But we did last summer We dealt with our Constitution. We dealt with our Bill of Rights, and we spent a great deal of time talking about our jury system in America. And the jury system happens to be the greatest safeguard we have to protect our individual liberty as citizens. Now, if we study our history, we'll know that this is not the first time a high-profile court case involving law enforcement authorities and civilians has caused problems. And what I want to do today, I want us to go back in time to March the 5th, 1770. March the 5th, 1770. Today, we refer to what happened on that date as the Boston Massacre. Now, the individual we're going to look at today is John Adams. But before I say much about John Adams, I want to give just a little background to what happened on March the 5th, 1770, which came to be known as the Boston Massacre. Of course, you know by the date that this is pre-American Revolution taking place. It's in the works, and tensions are very high at particular places in the country. In Boston, trouble has been brewing now for a couple of years, even a little longer than that, over specifically the Stamp Acts and the Townshed Acts, ACTS, that had been passed by the British government. And the people in the American colonies, they feel like that taxation without representation, that's one of their problems that they have with the British government. And they feel like that these acts that have been passed are especially making life especially hard on them. The Stamp Act was an act that any piece of paper that you had, official piece of paper, you had to pay a tax on it. So if it's a wedding certificate, if it's a title for land, you name it, whatever you had to do, you had to pay for it. There was a tax upon that. And then the Townshed Acts was another tariff upon things like tea and glass and just goods, anything that they would buy. So excessive taxation. And this is causing problems in the country. And these problems have been brewing for several years. But in Boston, particularly, British soldiers had been sent, and they took up residence in the town. Now, they didn't reside in a fort outside of town, but they came right into the middle of town, Boston, a big city at that time. And they set up residence in the town, and their orders were to keep the peace or keep order in the town. Now, in Boston, there is a very influential group of men, citizens, and they call themselves the Sons of Liberty. Samuel Adams, I know you're familiar with that name in our country's history. Samuel Adams is the head of the Sons of Liberty. He was known as a patriot. He was not, just depending on who you were talking to, he was known as a troublemaker. He was called the Quaker sometimes. Both these men were devoutly religious men, Samuel Adams and John Adams, that we're going to be looking at. But the people in Boston, they're not happy that British soldiers are occupying their city streets. And you can imagine that. I mean, we're not talking about a few soldiers coming to town. We're talking about two regiments of English infantry. And they had arrived on British warships, and they've taken up residence in the town. And so this situation had been going on for a couple of years. Everybody knew about it, and tensions were very high. There's a lot of animosity, and there's a feeling among the citizens, the majority of the citizens, that the soldiers had no business being there. Samuel Adams wrote a letter to the Boston Gazette, October 17th, 1768, so this is about 2 years before the Boston Massacre, and he wrote as under an alias name, but he quoted John Locke, and he said in that letter, he said, "Where law ends, tyranny begins. And he made the argument in that letter to the editor that martial law and civilian law do not mix together. He said they cannot long subsist together. And he made the argument, he said, the soldiers' highest priority was to obey their commander. They were supposed to obey orders. The civilians' highest priority was to obey the law. And so he made the case. These two cannot get along together. I'm talking about martial law, talking about a police state. You know, we hear a lot about that today. And I certainly think that as the politicians would say, the discussion needs to be had. We need to address what is going on in our society. Are we going to have civil law? Are we going to have martial law? Are we going to have a police state in America? And so some of this is good that people are recognizing what is going on. But it's nothing new. It's gone on in our country at different times. And we see an example of history right here. But what happened? I have to hurry along or time is going to get gone. But what happened? Tensions are very high. I said all that just to say this. This had been an ongoing problem. And tensions in the city of Boston and in the country were already high concerning the population and the British soldiers being in the city of Boston. But on the evening of March the 5th, shortly after 9 o'clock, there were some boys, some young fellows, that's what the newspaper account said, some boys and young fellows begin throwing snowballs at the sentry placed at the custom house door. Now, that's where the soldiers were quartered at, and some young fellows. And they had been sort of quarreling all weekend long, and it boiled over on the Monday evening. So snowballs were thrown at the soldiers. Soon, some other soldiers came to help out the sentry. There's one guy guarding the door. Well, other soldiers, hey, what's the ruckus? Because he's brawling and yelling and fighting going on. So other soldiers, they come out to help the sentry. Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to guard the place where they're staying at. And so one thing led to another. Here's the thing of history. No one really knows all the facts that took place on that night. But one thing led to another, and their commander ordered the soldiers to fire. And so the soldiers fired into the crowd. Three Bostonians were killed on the spot. One man died the next morning, and several others were injured on the evening. The things that happened. Now, the soldiers, immediately after the firing, they retreated into their compound there. They went in, they closed the door, they left the fight. And so that ended up being to their benefit that they immediately retreated. But what happened on that night, they had a system, they had alarm bells. Well, somebody began to ring these alarm bells. People came out by the thousands. It didn't take long for word to spread what had taken place, and the whole city came out, protested, filled the streets all night long until about 4 a.m. in the morning before they finally sent out enough soldiers and to get the people to go home and go back into their homes. But it was like a volcano ready to explode. You can imagine how tense that situation would be. Well, the following morning, the captain, the commander, his name was Captain Theodore Preston. He was arrested along with the other soldiers. There were 8 or 9 in all that was involved in this incident. Well, Captain Preston, now we're talking about a British soldier here, he sent the next morning for John Adams, asking if John Adams, who was a well-known lawyer at the time, that's what he was to begin with, asking John Adams if he would defend him in the trial. Now, this is the John Adams, cousin of Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams, he's the leader of the Sons of Liberty, a patriot movement. This is the John Adams who later would nominate Thomas Jefferson to begin work on the Declaration of Independence. This is the John Adams who would become the first vice president under President George Washington. And this is the John Adams who would become the second president of the United States. So John Adams was definitely on the side of the Patriots. He had already argued against the soldiers being there. He was his first cousin, is Samuel Adams, Sons of Liberty. So we cannot say that he was pro-British in any way whatsoever. But he took the job of defending the British captain and the British soldiers. Now, what you have to realize, what makes this applicable to what is going on today, is that in the court of public opinion, the soldiers were already tried, sentenced, and condemned to die. That was what the majority wanted to take place. That was what the sentiment in the newspapers was that these soldiers ought to die. They ought to be convicted, and they ought to be punished for what had taken place on the evening of March the 5th, 1770. I know everybody's heard about Paul Revere. Paul Revere lived in Boston at this time. He was a silver smith, and one of the things he did, he would do depictions, and they would take a print of this and put it in the newspaper. Well, he did a depiction, so he drew a picture. That's what this means. He drew a picture of what happened. Of course, they didn't have cameras and all that, but they would have illustrations and drawings. And his depiction of what happened on that night ended up in all the newspapers. And the way he illustrated it was all the soldiers lined up and just shooting into the crowd like shooting rats in a barrel. And so you can imagine how the court of public opinion, that image was burned upon their mind. Did you see that picture? Did you see the picture in the paper of all those soldiers and how they killed those civilians? And I mean, these are people that they knew and in the town. And boy, people, they wanted them to swing. They wanted their head. The soldiers, the head of the soldiers over what had taken place in Boston. Now, John Adams, the reason I'm talking about him today as a hero of liberty, he could have easily gone along with majority opinion and said, let them hang. Who cares? They're British soldiers. We don't want them here anyway. You know, good enough for them. Guilty or not. See, nobody knew exactly who started it. To this day, they don't know all the intimate details, and that's how it is a lot of times when there's something like this. Nobody knows except the people that were involved exactly what went wrong. But John Adams had a higher opinion of the bar and the law. He said this about the law. He said, the bar and the law ought, in my opinion, to be independent and impartial at all times. Now, if we have any sense, that's how we want the law to be. Impartial at all times and independent. Later, John Adams said about the trial, he wrote his own biography after he was president, but he said about that trial that although he faced much anxiety and humiliation, now it did not make him a popular person that he defended these British soldiers. But he said about that, he said it was, however, one of the most gallant, generous, manly, and disinterested actions of my whole life, and one of the best pieces of service I ever rendered to my country. Now, that's interesting that a man who would have a hand in the Declaration of Independence, be the vice president, who would go to Paris, France, and work out a treaty over there to end the hostilities between Britain and America after the American Revolution, who would become the second president of the United States, would refer to this as one of the best pieces of service I ever rendered to my country. And most people today, I would say, wouldn't even know that John Adams had a part in defending the British soldiers concerning the Boston Massacre. But as a result of John Adams' defense, Captain Preston and six other soldiers were acquitted of no wrongdoing in what happened on the night of the Boston Massacre. Two other soldiers were convicted of manslaughter, but they received light sentences because of the circumstances that no one really knew what was going on in a melee like that. I guess be in a brawl like that, you know, who started it? Nobody knows. And the trial, it's interesting to know, it drew out over 3 years later. But after 3 years, the interest of the people of Boston had not gone away. They'd followed this the whole time. And so they were just as interested at the beginning as they were at the end. In fact, when they had the final trial, there were so many people turned out. Over 4,000 people turned out to see the final verdict come in. They had to move the proceedings from one building to a larger building. So the whole thing did not just go away. Is very, very well known in Boston what was going on. But John Adams, in his closing argument, he said this. He said, "We find in the rules laid down by the greatest English judges, we are to look upon it as more beneficial that many guilty persons should escape unpunished than one innocent person should suffer. The reason is because it is of more importance to the community that innocence should be protected than it is that guilt should be punished. And we say again today that it is of utmost importance in a free society that the accused should have a fair trial. This is why we see this enshrined in the Bill of Rights and in our Constitution. The greatest probability of innocence being protected is in a jury system." And John Adams had faith in the jury system, that everybody deserved a fair and proper trial. And that would be the best probability of that would be before a jury of one's peers. And that is one of the things that makes America different from China and Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia and many other countries in the world, where their citizens are not guaranteed the right to a fair trial. There's a biblical principle there as well. Leviticus 19:15, "Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor." So I am thankful today for leaders and people who have principles to think higher of the law than those that would just follow the court of public opinion for expediency's sake. And these men and women, whoever they may be in our country that guard our jury system, they are really heroes of liberty. So we appreciate you listening in. Noah's going to come and give the contact information before we go off the air today. Have a great day, and God bless you.
This has been Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wynn Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org. This has been Blessings of Liberty on AM 1450 WATA Boone.